Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, we've got a great episode today. We've got Jack Rook on the show. Jack Rook is the creator of the Channel 4 smash hit series, Big Boys. And for those who didn't watch season one, it was this lovely story about Jack and grief and the loss of his dad and going to university and coming out and having this sort of central relationship with this character called Danny, who's a straight guy, and they have this sort of odd couple relationship, and everybody loved it. So the fact that it's come back is so exciting, and I've started watching already, and it's brilliant. Season two kind of picks up a little bit after where season one ended, or series two, and it's just as funny, it's just as sweet, it's just as heartbreaking as the first series. So it's just so lovely to be back in that world. So Jack is going to be joining us in just a moment. But before that, have you caught up on our recent episodes? Last week, we had Andrew Haig and Andrew Scott on the show, who came to talk to us all about All of Us Strangers, which is their new movie with Paul Mescal. And lots of you have been getting in touch about how much the episode resonated, how much the film resonated, and particularly what Andrew Scott said on the podcast, which is that the assumption that everyone makes that you are straight and what that's like. So let's go and have a look at messages, because lots of people have been writing in about last week's episode with Andrew Scott and Andrew Haig. So A. Forgy said, I had friends in the 90s who later came out as queer. I remember hoping that I had never unknowingly done anything like this to them. I've been very conscious of it whenever speaking to someone I don't know. My husband's daughter was 7 when we met, and she was talking about someone in her class once having a boyfriend. I said, no matter who you choose to have a crush on, boy or girl, just make sure they treat you well. It breaks my heart that anyone would feel like they have to hide who they are. Well said, A. Forgy. Andrew Scott Film Club said, this is so true. I've totally tried to change my language since my 13-year-old is trying to figure out who she is. Oh, that's lovely. Well, how nice that they have the support from you when they're trying to figure out who they are, because it's a big journey, isn't it? Rane Vermeding, I cannot read that name, said, yes, Andrew Scott, can't tell you how often I get asked about my husband when people see me out with our kids. Having to come out constantly and say my husband is actually my wife, they assume because I have kids I must have a man at home. Now you see, because I'm a gay man with a child, I get this as well. Me and my husband together, we get, where's mum? People don't mean any harm by it, but there's just this assumption. Thank you for all those messages. I've got something to say to you here. If you're still trying to keep your New Year's resolutions, why not go back and listen to our episode with GBTQ+ personal trainer Matt Boyles? The way he talks about exercise is very sort of inspirational, is sort of the word, positive. And we also talk about why it's GBTQ+, not LGBTQ+, in the chat. And he also called me out, very interestingly. He called me out because I was describing people with hot bodies. And he said, all bodies are hot bodies, Chris. And I was like, oh, yeah. So go and have a listen to that if you feel like being inspired and, you know, having some fun. Also, a reminder that we are hosting a live show in London on the 29th of February. I best put that in my calendar, hadn't I? Join me and the Like-Minded Friends podcast supremos, the wonderful Susie Ruffle and Tom Allen. And we're doing a one-night-only queer podcast show. It's going to be really good. It's going to be hilarious. And we all get to hang out. So get your tickets using the link in the bio or through our Instagram. Okay, that's all the housekeeping done. Let me put on the kettle because it's time to go and chat with the wonderful Jack Rook, creator of Big Boys. Here is part one of my chat with Jack. Jack, you're breaking our duck because this is the first time Homo sapiens has been recorded in this table setup.
Really?
True story.
Oh, this is nice.
It's a bit more Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, it feels quite sort of like political, like you're going to ask me about the news, like you're going to get the newspapers out, we're going to go sift through them all.
Shit, we're fucked. I mean, we did like 2 weeks on this podcast, we tried to talk about the news and it just went really badly.
Oh, really? Why? Because,
you know, when you start talking about something, you're like, I'm definitely not an authority on this. why am I talking about this conflict? And people are like, what was Section 28? Like, do you want to Google it? Should we have a quick Google?
I've been asked a few times to do like the newspaper review on the, and I'm just like, it's a setup. I'll just sound really thick.
I actually really admire people who can do that. Did you see Alan Cumming on Laura Koonsberg the other day?
No, is it good?
He was fucking amazing. So David Cameron was on.
Do you remember when David Cameron got voted Ally of the Year?
Really? What for?
Like,
who by?
2015. I can't remember.
It was the Daily Mail.
It was one of the, no, it's like one of the gay media news outlets.
Really?
It was like David Cameron.
Oh, because wasn't he? See, this is why I don't talk about politics. Because wasn't he? Samantha Cameron was the one who persuaded him to legalize gay marriage.
Yeah, Sam Cam.
Yeah.
Well, then let her have the ally. Let her have a moment in the sun.
Well, oh, it was 2016. It was different times.
Simpler times, happier times.
No, it was Rishi. I think it was Rishi Sunak and David Cameron. No, it was Keir Starmer and David Cameron were on.
Yeah.
Laura Koonsberg. They both got an interview each. And then Alan was on this table with a couple of other people. And they sort of would sit by the side while the interview went on. And then they would sort of, Laura Koonsberg would finish the interview with like Keir Starmer and trot back over to the panel. And Alan would just blast them and her for like the injustices and hypocrisy. And he was so good at articulating himself in the moment. You know what I mean? And you kind of, I haven't actually spoken to him about this, but like, you don't have to know everything. And I think that's part of the smoke and mirrors of politics, is you feel under-researched. And so you just end up being like, oh, well, I'm probably wrong.
Well, it's part of everything right now. Everybody wants you to have a comment ready for any particular social injustice. And I think that I studied journalism and I have a real belief in good journalism and good journalists. That I think because of how scary everything is generally now, the more attuned you can be to facts and truth and credible evidence, the better it is.
But how do you do that? Like, who are your go-to people? Do you have a couple of journalists who you're like, I love reading their take?
I don't think I do. I think I follow a lot of different types of news outlets. I probably do have a couple of journalists who
I find
really
Mystic
like.
Meg stuff good.
Mystic Meg. R.I.P.
Oh, shit, she's dead.
Yeah, she died last year. I do apologise. I think Diane from The Traitors should take over as the new Mystic Meg.
That's a fucking great
the
idea.
Mystic Meg. That's what we need.
So, I haven't actually watched Traitors, but obviously I've seen Diane, the meme.
Why haven't you watched The Traitors?
Because I've been on holiday. I've been filming and I've been on holiday.
Because it's not a good enough excuse for me.
And I do you know what? Also, like, also, we were talking about this a second ago. I get a bit catch up itis. You know what I mean?
Can I just say something very funny? I just did like what I sometimes do, which is like, I took like a fake sip. It's too hot. I couldn't drink it. So I went, and then pretended to swallow the other. It was just there.
Why did you do that?
Because I get embarrassed at the idea of sipping something and somebody seeing me sip. But because it's too hot and I know it's too hot, I fake I've ingested when I haven't.
I love that. And I love when you catch yourself doing something that
that's
is
a lie.
An entirely tiny little piece of theatre for yourself.
Like, yeah.
I did it on the train on the way here today. I got on the train and I don't normally go from the station. And I didn't know whether it was going to Paddington, but it did stop at Reading.
So you were like, well, safe. So I'll get to Reading and on our Lizzie line if I need be.
I hadn't thought
about
that.
Because you can get the Lizzie line from Reading now. But Lizzie line has revolutionised everything.
That's so true. We could go out in Reading for the night now. Yeah. But anyway, so I did this whole piece of theatre because I didn't want to ask the person opposite me whether I was going to Paddington or not.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, so at Reading, I'm going to check. And then I sort of got up, looked out the door, saw that it was going to Paddington. Then I was like, I can't now go and sit back down where I was because the person opposite me, who I don't know, I've never met, probably doesn't even know.
He's
going
to think that you tried to go off too soon.
Yeah. And then I was like, I'm not going to do that. So I had a word with myself and I sat back down in front of him. So I was a bit proud of
myself.
And
you invented a bomb scare. Yeah, those little lies that you do to yourself. Do you think that's a, considering the theme of the podcast, that's do you think that's a queer thing? Do you think we're better at it?
Yes.
Or do you think everyone's a deceptive little bastard?
I think everybody is acting all the time, you know? Yeah. And I think that, like, that's what's amazing about good actors is actually they can just access it on demand, whereas we all slip into it silently and don't say. I mean, the amount of performance that goes on with everybody with things is massive. And I think that... I actually think queer people are forced to examine that side of themselves and make a change, and therefore we are probably more aware of it. But no, I think everybody's doing it. And I actually think it's harder if you haven't had to go through some kind of, and it doesn't have to be queerness, it could be anything, but if you have to go through some kind of life change where you have to sort of call out your own bullshit, start to be authentic with people, all of that stuff, you lose tolerance for it elsewhere. And actually, if you haven't had to go through that, then I think sometimes you end up doing it your whole life. And that can be harder.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. I'm always a bit like, you know, like thank God my like top trumps card has got quite a lot of like tricky things to navigate because it does sort of... It beats some bullshit out of you.
Yeah. And how are you when you're lost in terms of performance in real life? We'll do physically first, then we'll come on to mentally.
I don't get physically lost.
No, but do you not like... what I'm saying is another time I often do like performance stuff on my own. It's like, I'll be like lost and like pretending I'm knowing where I'm going. I'm like, who is this for?
No, I've never had that ever in my entire life.
Are you being serious
with me? I've got such an insane GPS homing pigeon inside my brain.
What?
Like I could tell you where's north, south, east, west. Anytime. It's a weird one. I think it's maybe because I'm the son of a black cab driver.
Oh.
And like, so my dad obviously had to do all of the knowledge and all of the training. And I don't know if that sort of knowledge filtered through his sperm into me as an egg. And then I came out as a baby.
It does say that in the knowledge.
It does say that. Like, this is going to come out and you come. your children are going to be... Like, I always know where I am in London. And I'll often be like, oh, how do I get... Like, I don't really... I use City Mapper... But then it just tells me what I already knew all the time. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I knew that.
And
tell me. We could waste an hour. Give me two separate locations. Yeah. That's how you had to
Reading. Well, you knew Reading was on the Lizzie
line. Reading was on the Lizzie line. Precisely. I've proved my point.
So you've never been lost?
Never been physically lost. I've been mentally lost. I'm probably mentally lost right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, physically, okay.
Shame there isn't a city mapper for the mind.
Oh, well, there is, isn't there? It's like the set one.
Series 2.
There's Big Boy Series 2 now available on Channel 4 streaming.
Yes.
Yeah, I probably should get Headspace.
As a mental health advocate, do you not have it?
No, I do forget to meditate, and I know it's good because I was really dubious of it before I did.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what's all this? And then I did it and was like, God, it does help. It does sort of refresh your brain and make you less anxious and force your body into like cooling itself down.
Yes.
But yeah, I do need to do it more.
I used to do it and I've actually kind of given
Yeah, but that's it. Yeah, I gave it up. I did like 3 weeks of it. If I'm really, it depends if I'm anxious or if I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm really anxious, then meditation's amazing. And if I'm depressed, then I can just hear all my most depressed thoughts even louder.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you think, I know you've spoken about this before, but do you suffer from depression? Or, because I remember you making the distinction between depression and getting depressed.
Yeah. I don't fully know. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of years ago I'd have said I don't have depression, I just get depressed.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like, the older you get and the more cyclical you realise things are, the more patterns that I'm stringing together, the more I'm like, oh, I probably do have depression.
Right. It's another fucking thing to do.
But however, I find depression easier to navigate than anxiety.
Really?
Because I definitely have really bad anxiety. Mm. Really bad sort of generalized anxiety, but also like spikes of it, and it physically manifests itself in such a scary way.
Mm.
Like, I had a period of last year when I was writing series two of Big Boys where I was just dizzy for like 6 weeks constantly.
Whoa.
And I was persistently dizzy. And it was like being trapped in a like prison of the mind. It was fucking awful. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. And I went and saw like physical doctors for it and vestibular rehab therapists and people like that. And they were all just like, you're anxious as fuck.
Really?
And I was like, yeah, I think I am.
And what did you find anything that helped you, or did they find anything that helped you?
I suppose I had to do some like physical rehabilitative things because there's something called like the anxious dizzy cycle where the more dizzy you feel, the more anxious you become, and the more anxious you become, the more dizzy you feel. So you spiral down into it.
Do you know what's also weird is I'm getting really dizzy while you're saying this.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. Dizziness, I think, is like, I would love to write something about it, or because it was such an odd... So I've suffered with bouts of like vertigo, as I called it, my whole life. Mm-hmm. Now I've realised that they were just insane manifestations of anxiety. But I went to the doctors and had anti-sickness meds because that's what they give you if you're dizzy. Or
yes.
Would have like physical... I'd be like, I'm just really... dizzy, but I'd be saying it through tears, and like my GP was just horrible. Like, I just think you're really, really anxious.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm not. I'm a high achieving, successful person. How very dare you? But I wasn't at all. I was absolutely on the floor, wiped out with anxiety. And nobody really get. It's one of those things where it's like we've got to this point now in the kind of mental health conversation where it's so open, it's almost too open sometimes, because we've got like adverts for fucking, I don't know, Sif cleaner, like kitchen cleaner, and someone's overcome their depression because they've got rid of the limescale in their kettle. Like, it's
to
become
be fair, that would
so
help.
It's become so kind of capitalized upon and corporate, but yeah. We still are really bad. Like, not many people. And this is as close as last year when I write a show about mental health.
Yes.
Not many people understood it, and not many people were that empathetic.
Really?
My close friends were amazing, but beyond that, it was like, there's a deadline. If I'm not going to be allowed to have like an actual bit of mental unwellness whilst writing a show about people being mentally unwell, like, it's chaotic. So I feel, you know, very beloved by a lot of people I work with. But the realities of a production schedule, combined with the realities of like I'm writing a show about not only my own grief but like other people in my life's mental health and other people's grief, and like the juggling act of that is so big and massive that you've got to be so thick-skinned,
yes,
or else it's a pointless endeavor.
But does it feel that with all of that said, has it been cathartic returning to the story, and does it help you, do you think, or do you think it's more helping others?
I think it's both. I really love writing Big Boys. There's a team sort of that I find of like Jim Archer, the director, Charlie Goodger, who's the DOP. We had a lovely first AD called Charlie Elliott in series two, and she was just like my like source of inspiration and joy every day. Like,
oh, great.
I felt very lucky when we made that show. I was so unbelievably loved and looked after, and my vision was really like respected, but I was also challenged on things in a really kind way and made it like I had the best time. And it was, that was very cathartic because you're making something so personal that that it takes a lot of trust to give it over to other people.
Mm.
And when you do trust those other people and when they're impressing you and they're including you and they're listening to you and collaborating with you, it's like, it's the nicest feeling ever.
Mm.
So I feel very, very lucky in a lot of those regards. The very nature of it requires the compromise to be made by the writer or the person who's investing their personal story. Like, the compromise is mine. And I say that knowing that, you know, I'm not mini violining that because the benefits are amazing, and the fact that I get to write for a career and that's my job and I love it and it's a creative outlet, it's brilliant. Big Boys came out like 4 days ago, and they've been the most exhausting 4 days of my like 30s. And I've turned 30 about a year ago, but I'm like, oh my god, I'm older now, and it's anticlimactic and it's anxiety inducing, and all of my friends,
and that's with it being
younger
big
or a bit older than me, are like, you should be so happy, it's got 5 stars across the board, blah blah blah, and I'm just like, I can't be happy because I'm terrified because it's done and it's out, and my best times with it are done now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love filming and I love being in the edit. I love it so much. I feel like a sort of, and I love, you know, I also love rocking up at the BAFTAs with like 6 of my mates who are in the show. Like, it's the nicest feeling in the world. I feel like I'm in the Spice Girls and we're like a band.
I love that.
And then as soon as, you know, I go back to writing or it's out, it's just incredibly lonely. And
really?
no one will share the same set of anxieties as me. That's something I've learned, and I'm learning it the hard way, and I've maybe learned it this week, is that like the things that I worry about and my idea of success is not the same as anyone else's. And it's really hard because I don't want to ever rain on anyone else's parade when everyone's so overjoyed at reviews and reception. But in my mind, I've got like a very set kind of list of goals that I want to achieve. And until I've achieved them all, I feel a bit like in no man's land slightly.
And what are they?
I think for me, it's like feeling, I don't know. I kind of want to keep them to myself.
Okay.
Is that okay? In like a weird way. I know that's like the worst thing anyone could ever say on a podcast, but I want to keep them to myself because I think that I've been such an oversharer nearly all my career. And I really regret it. If I could talk to 23-year-old me now, I'd be like, not that. That's funny, but do you really want everyone to know? Like, I'd rein myself back in a bit more. But I think when I started writing and performing, it was in a real era of the oversharer.
Mm.
So it was like 2015, 2016. So we were all just really like pumping out our trauma identities online. And it was the very genesis of that. And I definitely overshared too much. And now I try to be a bit more thoughtful in that what I share about myself, I hope, eases other people to the realities of things. But then there are some things that I'm like, they can just be for me.
Mm.
And once I've worked through them, maybe I'll share them, maybe I won't.
Yeah, in retrospect. Well, you know, so I haven't finished series 2 yet.
Don't you worry, darling.
But I just loved it. And it's so nice to be
back. Where have you
got
up to?
End of episode 3.
Great. Yeah. Oh, well, you haven't even watched it then.
Because
first 3 episodes, I just spunk out all the jokes there. That's like a very frivolous sitcom. And then Eps 4 and 6 in particular of series 2, I think, are the show.
Really?
Yeah, I think Eps 1 and 2 are like a starter.
Oh, I love
3 is like an amuse-bouche with a bit of emotion at the end. And then 4, 5 and 6 are like the main course of pudding.
And why do you do that? Is that just the way it comes out, or is there thought?
I think it's a little bit the way it comes out. I think it's a little bit based on what my live shows were always like.
Oh, right.
My live shows, I would really feel, I felt like you laugh people into bed.
Mm-hmm.
You laugh people into bed, and then when you're in bed, you can like give them the best time of their lives, but then you can also open up and be vulnerable, and you can be intimate, and you can do all the different sort of things that you can do in bed, but you've got to get them in bed first as a viewer, as an audience, especially if you're going to then confront lots of tricky, intimate, painful, emotional things. So, and I also am really conscious that Big Boys' route to being a show is through comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if Big Boys was a drama, it could be a very different show.
Mm.
And But because of that, I try to sort of laugh everyone in, and mm-hmm. it's silly. And I love sitcoms. I love things that are a bit slapstick and a bit daft.
Yes.
Because often when you go through the most painful experiences in life, those silly slapstick moments sit just alongside them. Mm. And you have to look, see them and celebrate them for what they are. They are like reminders of life, and the sort of textures of like trauma, and where it's painful can also be incredibly affirming and incredibly cathartic, and combining the two. But yeah, I think it, for me, episode 6 of Big Boy Series 2 is the thing that I feel like the most proud of, because it treads that line the whole episode. And I think it says really saliently, in a way that maybe I've left a lot of things ambiguous in my writing, but it's very clear what it's saying, that like grief and life are the same thing, really.
Interesting. And yeah. What did you feel like
you might watch it now and be like, fucking oh shit.
What did you kind of want to cover themes wise in this series that you hadn't, because it was so interesting, series one, wasn't it? Because it was so taken into the nation's heart, and people loved the characters and loved the relationships, and it felt very complete. And what did you feel like you wanted to cover?
I think I wanted it to feel like a bit more expansive. And I think there were other characters in the mix that I had a real feeling that I wanted to write for. I think what I didn't want to do is completely deny Jack's dad's death. Mm-hmm. Like in series two, there's still a kind of grief storyline that continues throughout, because I don't think it's not like, oh yeah, 3 years have passed and I forgot my dad's died. Like it's an ongoing thing. So I wanted to show that ongoing grief and how you often learn from it 3 or 4 years down the line more than when it's immediately happened. I wanted to give a bit of backstory to the character of Danny, who I think was like so beloved and will always be like, you know, the most important character I'll ever write, really. And John Poynting does such a phenomenal job with him.
He's so good.
He's so good.
I remember John when he was doing those Virgin Mobile ads. Do you remember, like...
Yeah, he's done loads of weird... He was Weetabix guy for ages.
Was he?
Weetabix breakfast on the go.
But I just remember seeing him in those Virgin ads, and he had fangs.
Yeah.
And this is like 15 years ago.
It would have been about 10 years ago, I think.
And I was like, that guy's really good. I just remember thinking that in tiny little micro 15-second ads, he was just, his performance was incredible. And, he's the same in Big Boys. He's so brilliant. And I was saying to my husband when we were watching the new series, I was like, you know what I love about him? Like, even there was a shot and it was just the side of his face, potentially slightly the back of his head, and I could tell what he was thinking about, what was being said to him. Like, he's so there.
Present.
He's
a real, like, there would be no Big Boys without John. I sort of wrote it very much with him always in mind. And we did The Fringe together. Well, I've known John for like 10 years, but we did The Fringe together in 2017. And I was doing my Edinburgh show, my like one-man theatre show that was sort of about what Big Boys was.
Yeah.
And he was doing his one-man character comedy show. And I think we went to see each other's shows on the same day. He came to see mine, came out in tears, and I was like, oh, thank you, mate. And then I went ran and saw his. His was like an hour after mine. And that night we went for a kebab, and we were in this kebab shop really drunk, and we'd had a fun night. And I turned to him and I went, mate, I dare you to get a pizza. And he laughed so much, because just the idea of getting like a shit pizza in a kebab shop. We were just laughing loads. And the more I was laughing with him, the more I was like, this feels true to a friendship I've had in my past at university. And the feeling of excitement and joy and brotherhood and protectionism and all that sort of stuff. I was like, I just sort of knew that John was Danny. And then he came on board very early, and I just wrote it very specifically for him. And for knowing that there was always more depth to him than anyone ever thought. Because actually, when me and John first met each other, we kind of had a little row.
We didn't really.
I was like, who's this like handsome, attractive guy trying to do like funny, weird characters? Boring. Done. And I think he was like, who's this like slightly gobby kind of like spoken wordy comedy poemy boy who's like trying to like, who's got a big chip on his shoulder? We both just sort of like eyed each other up a little bit,
and then I love it.
Out of that came a really, you know, probably one of my favorite friendships I've ever had, which is the loveliest thing. The loveliest thing to me about Big Boys is is being like, oh, here's something that felt rooted in something real that we've been able to recreate.
And that's the end of part one. If you want part two, then I can tell you exactly where to get it. It's on the feed. Go find it. You'll really enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Powered by Spirit Studios.